This is where I have fun turning our theme music down and our microphones up. There we go. Well, welcome to the Aging Well Together show. It is our pre-Christmas show. So happy to have everyone joining us. And if you're like me, running around getting holiday presents throughout the day as we're about to. And then it was like, wait, got to get to the radio station now. I am so excited for today's show. Been looking forward to, I know I always say that, but looking forward to it since we planned it a few months ago. We have author Randy Young here. He's going to talk about the experiences that motivated him to write his new book, And the Stars Flew With Us. And I'll tell you more about that in a moment. But first, I want to say that I am excited for all the information we'll learn together, and as always, we want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show, even though they are hosting us with no heat and we are bundled up with our jackets. And I have a little portable heater, but I will, don't worry, WCOM station manager, I just brought it in. I will unplug it when I leave, but just to kind of help us warm up. Thank you for listening to our show. You can listen to us as you're doing now live or on our website, WCOMFM.org, and through streaming services. So many thanks for any way you are listening to us. The Aging Well Together show, as I always like to say, is brought to you by the wonderfully fabulous people at the Orange County Department on Aging. They were wonderful to start this show or give us the thumbs up to start this show, and they are amazing resources, and we thank you for everything you do for our community. Please join us each week as we share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. If you have suggestions for upcoming shows, and I'm excited that even this show came from a suggestion for topics, please reach out to us. You can email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, or you can connect with the Orange County Department on Aging. They can be reached at 919-968-2070 or through their website at orangecountync.gov/aging. That website is also fabulous because it is the place to listen to all of our previous Aging Well Together radio shows that have been turned into podcasts. Alicia, we are podcasters in a way. Wow. And we have done 26 shows that are all uploaded. So if you go to the website, you'll see a whole link area for the Aging Well Together shows. A shout out, as always, to our Carrboro-based band that plays our opening theme music from the Robert Bradford Quartet. They are wonderful. I was trying to do a little bit of the before it, but yeah, I didn't do a great job. For those who are fans of the Robert Bradford Quartet, be listening on January 11th. The band is coming in studio to do a live performance, so I'm really excited about that. And you'll hear a lot more at the end of the show. I'll let the song play longer than about 2 seconds. And then, as always, I welcome Alicia Reed, my wonderful co-host, the wellness instructor extraordinaire. We were trying to think of fun co-host names. We dated ourselves by saying you are the Ed McMahon.
Yeah, well, I'm a young Ed McMahon.
You're young Ed McMahon. And wonderful for you to be here. And as a quick introduction, I always like to say for myself, I'm Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services, and I continue to work with older adults and their families, connect with supportive resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 53, as I always like to say, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. Okay, now, so excited to turn to this week's guest, Randy Young. What is fantastic on so many levels, it is a perfect next show after last week's show when we had Carol Henderson, who talked all about writing towards resilience and helping folks write their memoirs. And now we have another fabulous local author who's going to share his book. And he's a writer. He's also wrote articles. I saw he has an award-winning newspaper column he wrote for over 20 years. He's a photographer. He just published his first book, And the Stars Flew With Us, Essays on the Absurdity and Elegance of the Great American Road Trip and a Celebration of the Man Who Steered Mine. Did I say that right? Okay, I am so excited. I love Randy's bio and his website. Randy, I specifically did not say too much about you because I didn't want to give away all of your stories for us. But for those who get excited about listening to Randy Young and want to order the book and find out more about him, in case I forget later, let me just say you can learn more about Randy at randybyoung.com. Okay, Randy, welcome to Aging Well Together.
Welcome, Randy.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this, especially at this busy, very, very busy time of year. But we're also in the company of extended family members and folks that that we care for, both children and our adults and siblings and so on. So I mean, we are pressed in against the hearth and the Christmas tree alongside folks that we aren't usually. So
I know.
It poses some challenges.
It is 'tis the season, and I know from my time working in long-term care, and I actually was doing tours this week. Now is the time when family members come to visit, and all of a sudden they're like, something's different about my loved one. And then all of a sudden these frantic calls and visits to folks like myself and other providers. But okay, we have a lot to get into. I want to hear all about the book. I want to hear all about your experiences. But first, we have a reputation, routine here at Aging Well Together. Randy, tell us about you and your background and what got you into writing and commenting on life.
Well, I'm not sure, Heather. You did such a great intro that I think I'm just going to replace that and transcribe that, and that'll be my back cover in my second edition.
But Heather says,
according to Heather. First of all, I want to issue out a couple of disclaimers.
Okay, disclaim away.
First of all, I had a moderate cold about 3 weeks ago, and there's just some lingering effects. Only just some coughing. So if you hear me coughing, I'm not like hopefully not infecting the whole studio.
Okay, Randy.
It's that horse.
As Alicia moves away to the next room. But also, and I mentioned this to you pre-show, I am not an expert in this. I'm not a medical caregiver. I would not presume to diagnose dementia or various particulars of old age and just the natural decline, what my book details quite accidentally, really is dealing with that eventuality. The eventuality that many of us are seeing, particularly what is called the sandwich generation.
Yes, I know that. I live that. I am a peanut butter and jelly sandwich myself. Yes. And explain for our listeners who may not be familiar with that term, sandwich generation.
So it's at the very core of it. It is people who are caregiving both for their children and for their elders, for their aunt or their parents or whatnot. So we're kind of pulling double duty.
Yeah.
And that can give way present caregiver stress, which is particularly highlighted this in the holiday season, and when we're trying to meet deadlines and trying to please everybody, trying to fix all that food and so on, and we're stressful 365 days a year, I think, particularly this day and age. But in any case, in answer to your question, I vacationed in New England for about 27 years.
I saw that on your website. You're like, I vacationed in New England for a few decades. And I thought that's a funny way of saying I lived there for a while. And I'm a New Englander, was raised in the Boston area. So tell us about your New England vacation. I saw where you went to school there.
Yes.
I stalked you.
Absolutely did. Oh, I'm in trouble now. I moved when I was six. My parents moved me when I was six. I didn't like take off. And
you're like, I gotta go, parents. I'm out.
And it took 6 years for my parents to find me. I was born in Hornell, New York, and as the Indigo Girls would say, when God made me born a Yankee, he was teasing. We came down from Hornell, New York to Louisville, North Carolina, just near Clemens, just west of Winston-Salem. My father took a job in teaching in the school there, phys ed and coaching. And then he wanted to study for his doctorate degree in physical education at Springfield College. So we were back up 95, but we kept ties with a family that was still down here. My mother's mother and father were still here in Carrboro. And that's the house that my parents eventually retired into in Carrboro. Right on Pine Street. We could throw a rock and hit it if we needed.
Well, that's not. Then you'd have to fix it. But that is neat. You're super local via New England, but yes.
It's the family history, at least the Crawford family history, which is my mother's family, dates back to 1765.
I saw that. You are hardcore.
And it's my particular thread of that family dates back to around 1795. And these folks, I don't believe they were Quakers, but they were pacifists and very progressive, particularly for the time. So,
yeah.
I mean, when we all look back, particularly here in the South, we look back at times long ago when we all kind of shudder to think like what our ancestors believed and so on like that.
But here you're feeling like it was stuff that you would support today.
I think I was very relieved to find out that the speculation is that my parents were on the right side of history.
Okay.
My ancestors were on the right side of history.
Yeah.
So my
ancestry
parents certainly
DNA
were.
That's amazing that you know your genealogy that much. So you are like super local.
And this is my story and I'm sticking to it. But
yes.
But when I came down in 1988 and relocated here. I worked in an ad agency in Raleigh for about a year and then worked at the university for 32 with Good Behavior College. And
yay, Tar Heel.
Yes. I did a great game last night. Very soon thereafter, I wrote an article, just kind of an emotional article, talking about the Tar Heels after they won the national championship in 93 with the late, great Eric Montross playing post position at that time. But in any case, I wrote it, and it got published in Carolina Court Magazine with Art Chansky and so on. And then I wrote a few articles for the Chapel Hill News, and then I got a regular gig. Eddie Landreth asked me if I would write community-oriented recreational sports scene, and I'd basically covered everything from women's bocce tournaments to...
There is such a thing, now we know.
Yeah,
I was today years old when that's awesome.
So my I guess my legacy, and I tell my wife this, my legacy, I think, is I'm kind of the byline to people's refrigerator magnets. So everybody had their grandmother or their child or something like that had got some award or some medal or some ribbon or won some road race at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And my goal was... My theory on writing was put as many names in the articles and spell them right, because it may be the only time that...
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off this, and I just want to thank you. That's beautiful, because as someone who's
out there,
put myself on the refrigerator or other when I was growing up, or now if my kids are in it, there is something special about celebrating, especially with a lot of bad news out there, to have someone who's adding positivity and celebration and... you're giving me all the feels. Thank you.
There's too much bad stuff on at any time of the year, and certainly don't want to be thinking about here. And we're talking about aging. It's a difficult subject, but at the same time, the book, and I'm not going to leap right into the book, but the book is more of a lighter side, kind of a comical side, if you will.
Good.
Kind of not making light of the situation, but trying to draw, draw from the ridiculousness of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing nothing wrong with finding the humor in it all, or I'm fine making light of it. I know, but as I tell my own story and experiences, I think it just makes it easier if we add so much of it is ridiculous. Or I was going to ask later or just comment later. I love your term when you say the absurdity and the elegance. You were referring to the road trip, but I think about that with my own caregiving experience and my own. There is a part that's absurd. It's more elegant. And if you don't laugh, you'll cry. And it's just so I love that it is filled with humor and no apologies or disclaimers for that needed. Mm-hmm. So you went from being this sports cheerleader, if you will, a writing cheerleader, a columnist, an award. I knew you wouldn't say this, so I will say
an award-winning
columnist that graces us here at WCOM. To then, what happened that all of a sudden, you know, you then moved to writing? Like, I'm curious, what motivated you to write the book?
Well,
now we're getting into it.
Yeah,
leading question.
First of all, the journalism market had dried up. To a certain extent.
Yes.
I mean, we lost the Chapel Hill News. We lost several other publications, and they kind of were consolidated. Mm-hmm. I think the journalism market has become kind of a feudal system. Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of running to get behind the castle walls.
I read an actual newspaper today because I took my dad to the airport, and Alicia knows my dad well, and so he gave me his newspaper. I was sort of shocked at how thin it was. There's not a lot there anymore, and it made me a little sad.
But. If folks were advertising and placing advertising in papers, I think we remember the Village Advocate and so on, like the things that were just purely inserts and advertising publications. I think if they found the advertisers and people were willing to put money in and try to provide reach to these particular customers and so on, I think the newspaper market would be fine. But people are just they're placing their money to advertisers. They're placing their money elsewhere.
And I'm bad. I'm pointing to my iPhone. So many of us we read our news through the phone. But then that's a whole other discussion. Yeah. But then you're looking at whatever's curated and comes through the phone, whereas. I read, when I was having my lunch today and I was reading the paper, I read things I wouldn't have chosen, but they're just right in front of me. I'm like, okay, well, let's...
I missed that.
And, of course, I love all the advice columns. I was like, see.
Yeah, and they're right there
in
front of
you. Okay.
But
I did the jumble. Okay, go on.
Very nice. You were... I have to get the Wordle and the connections.
I know.
But in any case, you had asked... I arrived at the actual book. My father passed away on Christmas Eve in 2017, we had at Walker's funeral home. We had a little brief ceremony. We knew that we would have him cremated, but. I joked with my brother that it was the only way that my father could get us in prayer on Christmas Eve and just make sure that we were all coalescing on Christmas Eve and get a minister and so on. So, about 3 weeks later, after the dust had settled and the holidays had run their course, we had a memorial kind of service at the University Baptist Church where Mitchell Simpson presided, and he knew my parents and ministered to my parents. Very progressive, brilliant man, huge heart, and he came up to me after I eulogized my father, and he said, "Your father would need you to write." He said, "You need to write." He said, "You have a voice. You need to write." So I said. Well, I felt like the Blues Brothers, because at some point in the Blues Brothers movie, they leave the nuns' house, the nuns' convent with the charge that they need to, find this money. So Dan Aykroyd says, well, now we're on a mission from God.
Yeah, I know.
So
it's been forever. Okay.
I told Reverend Simpson that the next summer I made a trip solo, a round trip, tracing a lot of the routes and visiting a lot of the cities that we would visit back and forth, visiting family from Chapel Hill and Carrboro to New England during the course of the time when we were located in New England, we would just beat that path down I-95 constantly.
I love that. It's on your website. What do you say? Something like, "I'm a child of I-95,"
yes.
I resemble that. So I loved that term.
My son just drove down from. He's at PA school at Yale, and he just drove down.
Good for him. Thank you very much, son. Thank you,
yes.
Young Junior,
yes.
Mr. Young.
Harrison just drove down I-95. So I just beleaguered him with comparing notes. I said, "Did you stop at the Maryland House?
Yeah.
How did you find the Delaware Bridge? Where did you find the sun?" So I mean,
I'm into Ryan's Deli in Connecticut. But actually, I did that drive in September, but my husband and I wanted to avoid I-95, so we kind of went up through Pennsylvania. We did 87, and
84, yeah.
We did whatever it is that avoids I-95. We did it, and it was wonderful.
So my father, on that 6 months hence after his passing, and he was 89, just about 89.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 months passing, I drove up the 81 to 84 route, which is inland, kind of less trucks.
Yes, that's the one that we did also, yes. Okay.
And that was great because my father was actually from central Pennsylvania, and I visited some of the areas where he spent his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, it basically enabled me and facilitated taking that face that had been kind of a mask of belligerence and fettered by confusion and antipsychotics and so on, and enabled me. You know, I mean, that's after my father's passing was the face that I saw.
It was the most recent face
as
he was kind of going through his own experiences with cognitive changes.
Absolutely, but this trip enabled me to go back, and I had his urn, his ashes, seat belted into the seat.
I read that.
Me.
Were you rambling a lot? Like, were you just driving anywhere, or had you planned it out, like that you were going to go places? And like, how did that happen? That you were like, "I'm going to take his urn," and I'm doing intentional versus spontaneous road trip.
The road trip was fairly spontaneous. I was. Putting together a couple of errands that I wanted to do. I wanted to go with my best friend to our college reunion, but I also wanted to go and see all these people that knew my father and see where he had been his strongest, his most vital, so that I could and basically by accident, I took away that mask and put back the father that I remembered. To this day now. When I think about my father, and the face I see is the face that I saw on those in where he was strong.
Mm-hmm.
This is
your story, not mine.
Right,
but my mom died after an illness a few years, and I know exactly that experience. That I think of my mom actually when my mom was my age.
Right.
We have this great video of her at, like, my sister's wedding, and I realize I'm older now than she was then. But now, and it's taken a few years because it's been 4 years. I can't do the math. 3 years. Well, I don't know. But all that, I'm agreeing with you, that you want to get back to them in their most vital stage. And when you sort of think about, this is what I think about my parent, as opposed to
the end.
Yeah, the complexity and the frailty at the end. So you're on this road trip. You're going back. You're doing your own Great American Road Trip. At what point, like, did you know you were going to write about this? Or somewhere through this, were you like, "I'm experiencing things that the Mitch told me to write down"? Like, where? How did the writing happen?
Well, Stephen King says never take a writer's notebook along.
Okay, thank you, Stephen King. Thank you for taking advice from a horror writer. But
I know.
He said that doesn't necessarily mean I'm taking his advice. So,
God.
So it's and not to contradict you, but
contradict away.
It's the irony is that at my age, I have to write it down.
Me too.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
So
everything.
And so I said, well, you know, Stephen King may have, you know, a memory like a steel trap or something like that.
He was in his 20s.
I had a writer's notebook.
Listeners, if you're 40 or under, get a pad of paper now. Okay, go on.
So I was, you know, I had a dictaphone. I had a little camera to take some pictures of where I'd spread his ashes. And I took a little notebook and I wrote down. So I did hope to glean inspiration from the trip. I did not necessarily dream of the healing that I would that the trip would provide.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't solve anything, you know. It doesn't bring my father back, but it brings the image of and the memory of my father back a little bit
for closure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other, I guess it's not surprising since you're a writer that I found so many of your words fascinating, but as I was stalking you on your website, besides the terms that go together beautifully, absurdity and elegance, I read somewhere that this process gave you redemption and catharsis.
Yes.
Those were bigger words, but is that what you're saying, that going through the process was... Or last week we were talking about the term restorative.
Right.
There's something or resilient.
There was all those words. It kind of placed me. You know, I've tried to carry on the tradition. As soon as my own children, my daughter Alexa was older. She's working in public health now and living in Raleigh. And
I saw that she's one of my people. She got her public health degree at Carolina, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh.
Yeah, me too. So Alexa and I, we are sisters, yes. Or I could be her mother. Okay, go on. So I love her.
we've gone on as soon as they were ready to be packed into suitcases or strapped onto the car with bungee cords, we sailed off straight up I-95 and took them to New England, and then we took them to Colorado, and then we took them to the Canyonlands, and then we took them to California, and then we took them, even when we flew out, we would then rent a car and drive. Mm-hmm. You know, we flew out to Colorado with the kids, their first ever plane flight in 2006, but we drove 1,900 miles all around Colorado.
Oh.
So there was the kids,
which
you know.
A beautiful area.
And kids leaning out the windows like old basset hounds and gulping air and asking, are we there yet? And asking for snacks or asking for, you know, a rest stop or anything else like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
my videos aren't coming through.
They're to the manor born. So, yeah, absolutely. And That was the redemption, I think. You know, I kind of wondered if when my father, it dawned on me, like as I came right back across the border to North Carolina after that trip, you know, after finishing that trip, it dawned on me that my father used to see myself and my brother Steve in the back seat the same way I saw my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I
as a pain. That's what my dad used to say. Sorry. Wow, y'all are a pain. We were a pain. Sorry. Go on. That's how my own family would see me.
I think both of them have the travel bug.
Yeah.
I think both of my kids have the travel bug. But my point was, you know, we are all kind of staring out and looking in wonder at the world around us, and we've got, you know, 360 degree views. So I kind of came to grips with the idea that if I had treated my children to the same wonder that my father had treated my brother and I to, then I could live with that. That was where the kind of the redemption showed up. I said, aww, you know, if my father, if I saw my kids in the rearview mirror, and that resembled the way my father saw us, then there was a symmetry to that.
What an interesting experience, in that, I guess, as part of your own, I don't know what you call, grief process or healing process. And it struck me, and not to get into your family business, but I'm going to a little bit, that also that you were...
well, you're stalking me, so, you know.
I did stalk you. Well, you sent me your link, so I was like, I'm going to look at this. That your family, your brother afforded you the opportunity to do this.
That's
I don't want to say aloud, but that you could
I wanted to say that
leave,
too.
You know, the and wife and take, kids for and a bunch of months and take this time, but also that Steve would, like, that you could take the ashes, and that, like, there was a number of people around you that it sounds like supported this process, which was a beautiful process. I love it.
It's particularly my wife. My brother, I'm still hoping to make a trip to New England, and he may be making a trip to New England with his wife next year. He hasn't traveled for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But so hopefully he's doing some traveling. But my wife, just patient saint that she is, and my kids. It was only about a week and a half.
Okay.
But
it was like 6 months.
So packed a lot. No, it was 6 months after my father's death.
Oh, okay.
So that was like,
makes
wow.
more right. Yeah. Okay. You and I both heard
I was
that
like,
wrong.
Wow, that was a long time.
All right. Okay. So that makes a lot more sense. Okay. So then, I mean, it all makes sense, but I was like, wow, you love it. So then you go through this process, and you're keeping track of your notes and your thoughts in different ways. Then how did it become a book? I'm still sort of fascinated that how that next step happened.
Well, the book originated out of the idea that there were so many just lyrical stories about road trips that had never really been put down that I'd seen. Bill Bryson does it a little bit. You know, he has a walk in the woods. He's he's an essayist, and I'd always had more. I think I had more success with my essays and so on as opposed to just covering it. Eddie Landreth and later Elliot Warnock, the editors at Chapel News, would allow me on occasion to write an essay just to have an op-ed piece. And so I really found my stride, I think, in writing some of these essays that were had some symmetry to them, had some irony to them, had some comedy to them. And so that was really the origin of this. I was not thinking of a framing story. I was thinking in terms of just enumerating all of these stories that my father had taken us, you know, on, you know, this day on a ride or that trip out to Colorado or whatever. So they were... There was not an order, a lattice to those stories. And then I said, well, you know what? I'm kind of re-enlivening this trip. I'm resurrecting this route that we had traveled over so many times, and to kind of revisit the places where all of these mythical stories came from. And of course, you know, they're mythical. They grew over time, but at the same time, it was. You know, Thomas Wolfe said you can't go home again. You can't, you also can't go to Buena Vista, Virginia again. you know, burnt cabins, Pennsylvania. There's no visiting that. I mean, that's just you remember that. But in any case, it was so the routine of the road trip, the daily events of the road trip, kept the story moving, and it was actually a structure. For you know, overlaying all of these little tidbits and little nuggets and little comical anecdotes and so on. So so I just kind of like spliced those things in, and you know I had just spoken at the Seymour Center. And lectured on a number of folks.
And that is, I jump in really quickly for our listeners, that is the senior center here in one of our two senior centers. We have, and we've had shows on that before, but just letting people know, the Seymour, Robert and Pearl Seymour Center, and the Jerry Passmore Center in Hillsboro. But that's our senior center here in Chapel Hill. Go on. Sorry, you're at the Seymour Center.
No, you're fine. I spoke to the issue of how to recognize a story in its present state.
I'm thinking of that too. So yeah, what did you share?
Is it its star-crossed lovers? Is it a quest? Is it a round trip? Is it all of these things?
Or is there like a lesson to it or moral of the story that you're trying to teach someone?
And in this, I just kind of shared what I went through. So there was not really a morality play here. I was trying to make sure that I didn't say this is the way that it should be done.
Amening you. Yeah. Yes.
And we can't do that, because every person is different, every caregiver is different, and every challenge is different that, you know, in through which we are caregiving and sharing our caregiving. So, you know, they're all going to have a particular set of circumstances and different challenges when we are taking care of our children and or our parents. So, you know, the last thing I would say is watch out for this or watch out for that. I can only say that this is where I kind of knew that we had let it go too far.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up about how you share your stories and frame them, and when you were speaking to others, because I noticed that about your caregiving experiences now, and I relate so much to that after you go through so much, you're in that place now of wanting to give back to others a little bit, and so I put it more under the advice, but it's not advice like you should do this. But the way that I always frame it is, you're not alone. Like I've experienced something. If there's anything I can share that will help you lessen the intensity and find the joy in it, but also and so was that a little bit of it? Like, hey, here are the watch outs. You said, here are the things that you just may want to be aware of, because I went through it and I don't want you to have to stumble through it or something.
There's a lighter commiseration.
Yes, that's a great word.
I think we all kind of go like, yep, been there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and hopefully there were at least a couple times that readers have found that yep, I, you know, the idea of, yes, like falling asleep in the back seat on a ride home and trying to and counting the number of trees and the number of turns, mm-hmm, off of I-40 to get, yeah, to the, you know, yeah, you can just look at the branches and the trees and, right, and you know, recognize, oh, I only got 100 yards till I'm home, mm-hmm, or something. I mean, these are things where people go, you know, this is the time before car seats, or time before.
Well, oh, okay. Because so, I'm also thinking. So that's about the kind of experiences of a road trip, and then there's also the experiences as a caregiver. Yeah. I was sort of thinking both, but I think they both get woven in here.
Yeah, I think I my initial intent was to have people nodding in talks of the road trip.
At the road trip, got it. And I wasn't then, sure which, yeah, which part. Okay, got it.
And this quite accidentally became, as I said, this kind of a piece of redemption, or a chronology of this mm-hmm, process of redemption. And that was, I was like, oh, well, people are actually kind of, you know, this is galvanizing a certain portion of the populace. This is, you know, whether or not they've read my book or not. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks are disconnected out there, mm-hmm, and they don't realize that other people. I mean, it's a very solitary situation when you're a sole caregiver, or mm-hmm, you don't have the help of you know,
anyone,
relatives or something like this, and you feel as if you're the only person going through this in the world.
Right. Yes.
So it quite accidentally became a commiseration.
Yes.
With folks who are actually going through this. And I've heard from a number of folks who said that they've lost, that are my age and have either lost or have gone through a caregiving for a person who's a dementia patient or whatnot, mm-hmm, a parent. So that's been very reassuring.
Yeah, I feel like, and even in this conversation, but when you go and talk with others, I could see the themes kind of, to me, I'm starting to think in like three different pathways. There's you and your experience as a writer and how to get stories out and how to frame stories. There's literally the story about a road trip and all of the things that brings up and the memories and experiences of a family road trip and nostalgia. And then there's all of the themes around aging and caregiving. So to me, it just feels like all of these things just are weaving in. I know it is with my questions for you, and I'm wondering, as you share your story with others, especially with folks locally, which one are, do they want to talk more about the road trip experience? Because I know I have memories of doing family road trips in the 70s in the wood paneled, mm-hmm, station wagon. Do they want to talk about the caregiving, or do they want to just say, hey, how did you publish a book?
I think it's been about equal parts. You know,
I got on something there.
I think the lead in has been, you know, when I give an elevator speech about the book, generally it is twofold. One is the celebration of my father, mm-hmm, through, yeah, all of the decline, and my mother, mm-hmm, ultimately, but also I think my first order of business is to sell folks on the idea that they experienced this too. That they have been on road trips and stared at the back of their father's heads, mm-hmm, you know, and their mother's, yes, heads, and they'd been issued beach nut gum and cheese nabs, dating from the McCarthy era.
Oh, you still get the nabs and the Lance crackers, right, and all this stuff, and yeah.
So you know, I've had a couple of book readings and a couple of book club meetings and so on like that, two of them actually laid out all of these road snacks and so on.
Wow. Little
gift bags.
Cool.
So it was real touching.
Yeah.
But you know, it's I don't want to say what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when I stumbled on this, I was still writing my column, and when I started caregiving for my folks, and you know, I can't underplay, you know, the role and support of my wife,
mm-hmm,
and I think one. And I definitely want to share this, probably first and foremost. One of the best pieces of advice that was given to me, and I share this at almost every meeting that I have to talk about the book, is the Reverend Mitch Simpson, who we, mm-hmm, discussed earlier, just took me by the shoulders. And he just, you know, once I was going through it, before either, mm-hmm, of my parents had passed, and he just took me by the shoulders. He said, forgive yourself.
Oh, I love that.
He said, you are going to have, during the course of time here, during the full course of time, you will have thoughts that will plague you. You will have these, you know, stinging nettles of ideas or images that pass, and just you want it off your plate, and you just want it to end, or you just want this for your parents, or you just get frustrated, you get angry at your parents or something, or you know, people that you're caregiving. He said, just forgive yourself that. He said you're going to think these things. He said, don't take them to heart. Just move along and just don't discount them.
Yes.
But don't hold yourself accountable for every thought that you have and every dark thought that you have. So
I love that. A friend of mine, when I was going through it, when I was telling her all this stuff, she said, you're living the serenity prayer. And she's like, there are things that you can't control and you need to let those go. Yeah. So I feel like that's all in that same thing. Forgive yourself. Figure out what you can control, what you can't, all of that. But that's, and I know as I speak with, I was speaking with a friend not too long ago who lost a parent and was still second-guessing some of the decisions, and it was like, yeah, how do we, and what we do to ourselves. And these are complicated. Okay. So I'm a very... As creative and fabulous as I think I am, I'm a very literal. I know. Thank you so much. I'm a very literal person, and I find that metaphors. I don't do well with metaphors. Like, people have to spell it out to me, and I'm just like, and it's just so funny. People say, they're like, well, you know, the mountain kind of was the theme. Like, no, you got to tell me what it is. But it hits me that the road trip. I'm just hitting me now. That's a metaphor also because, okay. See, again, I was a little slow there. Mm-hmm. That it's not just the literal history of the experience of the road trip, but as being a caregiver and going through that, I guess, that experience of being a son and a caregiver and then understanding being a father and understanding your dad, that the road trip is also a metaphor of what you experienced. Is that true? Did I just catch that?
No. Absolutely. Aww. Absolutely. Oh, God. Nobody
I didn't go to Dartmouth like you, but I went to Brandeis. I did pretty good. But no, I'm very, I miss metaphors. And so the fact that I've been thinking about this interview for a few days, like, it just hit me now. The road trip was a metaphor.
Yeah, I had interviewed one point in time this gentleman who was known as the Marathon Man. He ran 50 marathons in 50 days, I believe.
Oh, his name I've heard of that. But
Dean
awful.
Karnassus.
Yes.
So he spoke to Chapel Hill Carborough Pacers, and I was coaching at the time, and we invited him out there, and we all went on a run with him and so on, and he talked about how to eat pizza at 4 o'clock in the morning at Death Valley and running through that stuff. But he said that life is an out and back.
Life is a what?
He said life is
an out and back.
Well,
it's a track term.
Yeah, he said.
As Alicia knows, I don't know physical fitness.
So he said,
life. Sedentary term. Life is sitting on a couch and okay, go on.
Life is an out and back. It's a round trip or something like that. And I said,
you
know what? It's the way I found it. Life is not just one big out and back. Life is a series of little cycles.
Yeah.
Where we are children that are at the deep end of the pool and hanging on the side, and then we like venture out into the deep end, swim around, and then come back to our parents, and then we come back to the side of the pool, and we kind of venture out farther and farther until we are comfortable, you know, staying afloat for ourselves. But most of the time, you know, at least during formative years, we kind of swim to the side or into our parents' arms and so on. So we are experimenting with life in these little out and back journeys, but we continue them. And like you said, there is the also cycle of the generations as well.
Yeah, so. I mean, at some point they start swimming to you, or I had a friend of mine say recently, at some point you look around and say, oh, I am the adult in the room.
Right.
It's like when there's a problem, and then you're like, who are the adults? Oh, that's me.
Right. How horrifying.
Yeah. I know. I had my 22-year-old say that to me recently. She even said, you know, I think about that now with my age, but she said, I realize I was the mature one in the room. But no, we realize we are...
We've grown.
And we are, as the generations, you know, as we get older, as the generation, at some point, we're the older generation that people are looking at. But I love this issue that you were able to put it out there, and then and how is it being received?
Very well by the folks. Yeah, I'd love to see it in more circulation, but for the folks that have read it, they've been highly not really necessarily changed, but moved, I think.
Yeah.
Particularly people that either lived on the road or just loved the idea of the road trip, but also the people that remember the road trip when we were a little bit less regulated.
Right.
I will tell you, so I was telling my dad this morning, I was taking him to the airport, and I was telling him about you. I really love this road trip concept, because I think if it was other things about, you know, generational changing or caregiving or whatever, it would have been. But the road trip, and I said, Dad, remember that? Because we traveled a ton. And we went across country twice when I was in 1975 and 1976. So I was 5 and 6. So, and I was the youngest. So I was in the back of the Ford station wagon.
Yep.
You know, no seatbelts. You know, it was me in the cooler. Actually, it was really lovely because I was laying down. And, yeah, just in the middle of. So we experienced so many road trips, and now it is a little bit more electronic, and there's more seatbelts, and there's more
regulated
entertainment.
You can't roll the windows down.
We all can relate to it. The fact that this is your interview and all I'm doing is being nostalgic just shows that it touches on something. He's laughing at me.
Oh, no, it
resounds.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, goodness.
So
you can't roll
I could. Well, now I couldn't put it down because I was in the back. Like, I was in the back. Oh, that's right. Sometimes I would say put it all the way down.
Down on the back of that station wagon.
I know it was a little bit. That's true. Or like, hey, look out for tornadoes.
Then the exhaust just flowed right back into the back window. but given where we are in our discussion here, this would be a good time for me to give this kind of gratuitous self-promotion and give a reading.
Thank you. Funny, you were gonna. I actually was gonna ask you to do that, but first, I do want to say that for those of you who are, I'll promote you, who are needing last-minute Christmas gift ideas, where can they find your? Because you were talking about when you go around and you talk with people, and I realize you can get it. Let's do a shout out to Flyleaf Books, MacIntyre.
Right here at This and That. A lot of people have found it at This and That Gift Boutique right here in Carborough on Main Street next to Acme Grill.
Yeah.
So it's been there, and then I try to promote supporting our independent bookstores and so on, as opposed to
absolutely.
But you can order them from Barnes & Noble, and you can get them from Amazon.
I know, and I saw even Walmart. Like, I was like, you're out there.
Yeah, it's just part of the distribution, you know, process that you choose. I chose
That's
Amazon
great.
At first, but then I realized that it was kind of bypassing. The independent booksellers and these mom and pop shops that really thrive.
And you're part of it.
Yes.
I know. All right. And yes, I know you brought a reading. And so, yes, I'd love to hear a little bit of it.
So this is just kind of explaining why the book is named as it is.
The Stars Flew With Us. Yeah. Thank you.
So this just kind of explains the things that Heather, you were just talking about, that sense of being in the back seat or the way back or whatever. But we changed our old Dodge Dart, which is on the cover. There's a picture of us driving on the cover through wheat fields, and then you see the stars above you. But it was actually a Dodge Plymouth Cornet Custom that we bought in 1972, and the windows sloped in at the back.
Oh, right.
So here's where I kind of explain it. This is early in the book to just explain, to give up the mystery of why the book is entitled what it is.
Thank you.
The Cornet Custom was also much more aerodynamic than the Dodge Dart. All windows sloped inward at the top, for example. Mm. Dad hated this because leaving the windows open even the slightest bit might allow rain to seep in.
Mm-hmm.
But it also meant that the wagon's rear windows sloped forward. This allowed my brother Steve and I to lay back on our pallet with rolled-up sweatshirts for pillows and gaze straight up through the rear window at the sky as we hurtled through the night. Dawn was undeniable when it finally came. Light poured in from every window, and my brother and I would resist it until we finally stirred and groggily begged for breakfast. But through the deep of night, everywhere was inky blackness, where distant porch lights or small-town street lights would occasionally streak by like shooting stars. The glow of distant cities would cast silos and steeples in ghostly silhouettes. But above us through the glass and into the depth of night, the stars hung motionless out in all that cold. A single mile or 1,000 would not change our perspective on the universe. But for a few minutes on the dreamy edge of sleep, there was a sense that the stars were along for the ride. We couldn't outrun them if we wanted to. They flew with us as surely as if they knew the way. For all our speed, the constellations would not come unhinged. All was right in the heavens, and we fell asleep, bundled up warm and safe in that confidence. So that kind of gives you this sense of like all the kids who ever like slept in the back of the car
I
and
was
going.
With you completely. I could picture it.
The stars,
and thank you. It was so it was so beautifully. Oh, you're a great writer.
And I could, thank you so brought much. Your imagination. You could just you
and
knew
I
it.
Could
I remember.
I could be there too, as what opposed guys, to like what what's guys, your metaphor? Because I can't follow. I'm like, oh, I'm there and having been there. I mean, we're all of a certain age that we were all doing road trips in the 70s, and yeah. It's like, oh, I know that feeling.
So, incidentally, are you guys busy for the next 3 months? Because I think I'm just going to take you along with me if any presentations.
Oh, we're
you're
good.
You're my big fan.
Because that way we could do your promotion. That way you don't have to say, oh, award-winning and fabulous book and all that. You
we
let your...
Actually
you need a Wrangler. I'd be awesome.
Ooh, and they're
I'd be
they're
good
back
for
out.
It. Yes.
Yeah.
Just, sure. Happy to do that. Give me a microphone.
Wow.
Or just keep coming off.
And you can just... We can just stream wherever we stop.
And I'll give you half of my profits. Which,
oh, well
which
then,
would amount
then
to like
then we'll get a hustle.
Yes, would be like
road.
Zero.
We could call it Radio
well,
Road.
And did you sell? You didn't self publish this. This is
self published in actually in Carrboro.
Wow.
Because I didn't think you could self publish and have it at stores like this. I thought, okay, go on.
So
I'm like, this is impressive.
To get to the tech, I guess technically. Most of the people that place books for self-publishing do it just strictly on Amazon. It's the shortest route.
Yeah.
You just
That's
because
right.
you just mount, the, mount
yeah.
the thing, mount the thing on Amazon. The authors get like 100 or 200 or how many ever order hard copies that they can paperbacks that mm-hmm. That they want to print to hand out or to sell themselves or whatnot. But the whole idea is that, like after a few months, I realized that there was. A lot of independent bookstores that don't like to be competing with Amazon.
Oh. Sure,
they don't because if the book is $12.99 on Amazon and or you have to go down to Flyleaf and pick it up or go down to McIntyre's and pick it up, they don't want to be competing with that. Mm-hmm. So I changed I guess the pejorative distribution source to Ingram Spark,
okay.
which basically makes the book available. Across the board, around the world, it makes mm-hmm. it available to bookstores, to Walmart, to Target, to anybody that wants to place. Doesn't mean that necessarily the books are going to be there, but if you order it from Walmart or Barnes & Noble, it will be
they
there.
They can get it there. But
they can get it. And
hopefully you're on
thing.
That shelf, like the local
right.
artist
right.
Yes,
shelf
yes.
there.
Have been, yes.
So we have a few minutes left, and speaking of your creative abilities and your abilities to, I'm trying to think of a fun segue, to share your visions, you're like, what are you going to ask? Besides writing and speaking, you're a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I need to, to use your pun, I need to kind of focus on that for a moment. But
sure.
I'm bummed. See, because you said on your website, no pun intended, focusing on things. See, I saw that too. Tell us a little bit about how you're expressing your experiences both in writing, but then where does this photography thing come out?
well, my father was, I'll bring this up. This is just a very quick digression. My father came down here to see about a girl, not yet his wife, not yet the one who would become my mom. But he met her at UNC at Kessing Pool. But he came here, and the football coach Carl Snavely in 1948 was actually the head coach at his high school, and he introduced himself. To him, and they needed bodies post World War II. So he signed an application at the top and said, "Here, walk this over to so I've been, I guess." I have a basic gratitude for physical education because that got to my father. My father played in the football team for a while. Then he started in business, but then got his master's in physical education.
Yeah.
So a lot of what I did was just accompanying photography for the articles. Because they were starting to cut back in the budget and the purse strings.
Oh, sure. Yes.
So I had to learn and just pull myself up by my bootstraps and learn photography. And I listened to so many folks, Grant Halverston, Jim Kinney, Dan Sears at the university and so on. And I was a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
And now I do primarily action photography.
Oh.
I do landscape and so on.
Sports photography is hard because people aren't sitting still. I mean,
right.
they're just like going and running. That's the hardest of all. because you're catching something going super, super fast. Go on.
So I was recently, as an example, I was recently out right in front of your building photographing the Gallopin Gorge 8K road race on Thanksgiving morning.
You are still covering activities.
So, yeah.
You know what? You need to follow Alicia around and cover some of her classes.
Oh, I'd love to.
There we go.
That would be funny.
I've got a whole plan for you.
Let's go in the water. You can do it.
But she is a marketing whiz.
Well, no. I do have a whole other plan for you because you have so many experiences, especially local, and I know that WCOM is looking for more shows and
That's
more
right.
DJs. Alicia, we are so going to talk Randy into having a show where you just share your... I know, right?
And then writers would come in.
Basically, just every show, just read another one of your chapters.
We used to
and
have
then
a reader,
share.
And they don't anymore. I think you should do that.
Yeah,
just,
so we're gonna.
Let's just
I know,
get you signed
we,
up.
We only have 2 minutes left, but so I wanted to. So we'll kind of get you. Hopefully we'll have you on our show, but I really think you should have your own show. I think there's a lot. Since 1765, there's a lot your family can speak about the Chapel Hill Carrboro area.
And people could relate to.
I know. Okay, other things that you want to share with us. So do you have... people can get them. I'm trying to promote you. Let's see.
Yep.
People can buy your book. People can find out about you on Randy B. Young, and that's B as in Bob. RandyBYoung.com. What else would you like other folks to know about your experience, either as a writer, as a driver, as a son?
I think in dealing with my parents, that other than the fact that I've been absolved of the feelings, the dark thoughts that I had,
forgive yourself, forgive the trespass.
But I think so much in dealing with a person is tone.
Mm-hmm.
My father had a number of outbursts, like some, he faced his decline into dementia with some belligerence and acting out and something like that.
Yeah.
But if I approached him with a tone, with a bright tone, all the anger left his face, all the belligerence left
that's
his face,
good.
All of that. So,
he
so
caught
I mean,
the emotion.
I mean, in a lot of caregivers, the folks and the caregivers around
Come on,
locally
it's time to do
are
this now.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh yeah,
that's a,
but
that's
it's all
good.
About tone. It's
very good.
So,
well, speaking of our tone, it is time for us to end our show today, but I want to give off a sense of positivity and gratitude for coming on our show, but really for telling your story, because I think it's so, and telling your story so beautifully, I think there's a lot that folks can get out of it in terms of their own resilience, their own absurdity and elegance, their own catharsis. So, Randy Young, thank you for coming on the Aging Well Together show.
Absolutely. Alicia and Heather, thank you so much. This has been an honor and an absolute pleasure. And I'm not saying I'm going to start a new radio show here, but I'm absolutely
eager
to come on yours at any time.
All right. And listeners, hope you have a wonderful holidays. And we will talk to you next week before the end of the year. So you'll still get us one more time in 2023.
Yay.
But thank you. And here's the Robert Bradford Quartet.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.